This is TH408, week 4, class number 2. Now, picking up here in Romans chapter 13, Paul starts off in verse 11 and says, "And that, knowing the time that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly, as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof." And this is, it's kind of interesting what he says in verse 11. I mean, quite frankly, I find this phrase to be, at first glance, a little bit confusing. "And that, knowing the time that now it is high time." I mean, what? Well, let's take a look here. He's talking about where he says that, "For now our salvation, now is our salvation nearer than when we believed." He obviously can't be talking about getting born again, because these people are already born again. The salvation that he's talking about is that which was prophesied in several different passages. Didn't put them here in the outline. But it's about the salvation, in other words, the completion of our salvation. He talked about it a little bit there in Romans chapter 8, where it talks about creation, the redemption of the body, so on and so forth. The salvation he's making reference to here is the salvation that's going to take place when it's all said and done. In other words, the return of the Lord, He's coming back, we'll be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, bodies are going to be glorified, we'll be like Him, we'll see Him as He is, etc., and so forth. This is the salvation that he's making reference to in this passage. The early church believed that Jesus was returning at any moment. I mean, they felt like, okay, we wake up, today's the day, this is it, He's coming back today. If you look over in John chapter 14, you can see a foundation for this belief. John chapter 14. And if you look in verses 1 through 3, Jesus says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, ye may be also." So he's telling them, look, I'm going to go prepare a place, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to get you. Now, think of it like this. These guys have been with him, with Jesus, for, you know, 3.5 years, roughly. And they hear him say, "I'm going to go and prepare a place for you. Then I'm going to come back and I'm going to get you. I'm going to take you where I am." Okay, now what would you be thinking? Okay. He's going to leave, get something fixed up, I don't know, maybe an upper room. He's going to fix a place for me. Okay, that's the imagery in my mind. Then as soon as he's done, he's coming back, he's going to get me, and off we go. Now look over in Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1. Take a look at verse 6. "When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel?" Okay, now Acts chapter 1, what we're reading, this takes place after his resurrection. So he's been crucified, been raised from the dead, he's appeared to them, and they're talking to him, just like he's normal. Now I know that might sound kind of silly to you, to hear it like he's normal. Think about it. He died. Now they're talking to somebody that raised from the dead. And they've become, I don't want to say accustomed, but they've become used to the fact, okay, he was dead, but he's alive now. And yeah, he's definitely, you know, different, but he's still Jesus. And so they're talking to him and they're saying, okay, now that you've died, raised from the dead, I mean, if ever there was a perfect time to restore the kingdom to Israel, it is right now, Jesus. Dead man walking, alive. Go figure. But Jesus, this is it. And he says in verse 7, "It's not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father hath put in his own power. But ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth." And when he had spoken these things, while they beheld, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, which also said, Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus, which is taken up from you into heaven, shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go into heaven. Okay, now, what are you thinking? Well, okay, he's coming back. He's coming back. The same way that we saw him leave, he's coming back. Okay, now what did he say to do? Okay, yeah, he said, go back to Jerusalem and tarry till we be endued with power. All right, you know what that means, don't you? That means we go back to Jerusalem and we be endued with power when the Holy Ghost comes. After we are endued with power, that kind of power he's talking about, that means that we're going to be ready to work with him in reestablishing the kingdom to Israel. So that must mean that as soon as we are endued with power, he's coming back. Can you see how they would come up with this? Because they didn't know for sure. So they lived, the early church lived with this everyday anticipation, well, then tomorrow must be the day. Well, then tomorrow must be the day. Because those angels, those two guys in white that we saw, I mean, they said the same way we saw him go up is the way he's going to return. So that must mean we're going to see him when he returns. Angels didn't say that, did they? They just said the same way you saw him go up is the way he's coming back. But they did not say you will see him come back. But see, in their minds, this is today. It's a now thing. It's a tomorrow thing. I mean, it's going to happen soon, really soon. I personally believe that because they were so convinced of his absolute today or tomorrow return, this is one of the reasons that they were so sold out in serving him and that their lives meant so little, because they felt, okay, look, whatever happens is going to happen, but he's coming back, and he's coming back today. He's coming back tomorrow. We've got to let people know. We've got to get, you're going to whip me? Whip me. Fine. But listen to me first. Let me tell you about it. He's coming back. Do you hear me? He's coming back. What's it? You're going to kill me? Okay, before you kill me, let me tell you about him. He's coming back. They were so convinced of his return that they weren't thinking of their own lives. Well, as you and I know, that didn't happen. I mean, he hasn't come back yet. But the thing is, Paul believed this as well. That's why he's writing the way he's writing here in Romans. Now, think about this. He didn't receive this revelation with the rest of the apostles. He was not there when Jesus said, I go to prepare a place and I come back to get you. He was not there when Jesus ascended up to heaven and those angels said, look, the same way that he went up is the way he's coming back. I want you to look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, look at verse 9. Paul says, I hasn't seen nor ear heard, neither it's entered into the heart of man the things that God's prepared for them that love him. But God has revealed them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual with the things with spiritual. But the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Now, what am I getting at here? Paul is revealing how he gets his information. How that he's received instructions from the Lord. Look at another place, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 23. Paul writes, For I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you. Now I know he's getting ready to talk about communion, but you have to remember the instructions that he had for communion. He wasn't there in the upper room when Jesus served communion with the other apostles. This was a divine revelation from God, from the Lord, to Paul. And so during Paul's time of fellowship, his times of fellowship with the Lord had revealed unto him the whole concept of communion, what it was all about. And Paul taught that. Likewise, this whole thing of the Lord's return, This was conveyed to Paul because you can read about over there in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Well, here in chapter 1 Corinthians 15, where it talks about how the Lord's going to return and how that the mortal, immortal, and the corruptible, incorrupted, all that. He got that from the Lord. So he understood about the Lord's return. And he said, you know, that day is coming. He's returning. He's coming back. So the instructions that Paul is writing over here, or the things that he's passing along to us in Romans chapter 13, he didn't get this from the apostles. He got this by divine revelation from Jesus Christ. And so what Paul is writing is, and that knowing the time that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation, it's nearer than what we had believed. And what's he saying here? What he's saying is, I don't know exactly when. In other words, Jesus never said anything to him about the when. Remember what Jesus said to the apostles? I don't even know. Now, the Father, he knows, but I don't even know. Paul is saying, look, he didn't give me a date, but he looked me right in the eye. And he said, Paul, I'm coming back. Now, you better let the people know I'm coming back. And so Paul comes and he says, hey, it is high time to wake up out of sleep and get your act together because it's nearer than we ever believed. Well, the same thing is true today. It's nearer than we ever believed. I mean, every moment that you live, every second that passes by, it's closer than what it was. You wake up tomorrow, we're closer. He's coming back. He absolutely is coming back. Well, verses 11 through 12 here in Romans 13 reveal an expectation that Jesus' return is imminent. In other words, Paul is writing here and he's saying, listen, he's coming back. Wake up. Open your eyes. He's coming back. Now, notice what he writes in here, these terms that he uses. He uses the phrase, high time to awake out of sleep. He writes, salvation nearer than we believe. Okay, and we know that salvation is talking about the Lord returning to take us with him to be glorified. He writes, the night is far spent. And he says, cast off the works of darkness, put on armor of light. Okay, now, what Paul writes here, it clearly and absolutely parallels what Jesus spoke in Matthew 25. Now, I want you to turn over to Matthew 25. Keep in mind what Paul wrote. This is powerful. Turn over to Matthew 25. Beginning in verse 1. Jesus is teaching and he says, then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. When the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Now, all of this is an expanded version, an amplified version, really, of what Paul is writing over there at the end of Romans chapter 13. Now, let's take a look at this. Paul writes, it's high time to awake out of sleep. This parallels Matthew 25, 1 through 5. The kingdom is like 10 virgins that took their lamps to meet the bridegroom. 5 wise, 5 foolish. The foolish didn't have any oil, and the wise had oil. The bridegroom tarried, and they all slumbered and slept. Now, in a Jewish wedding, the day of the wedding was known ahead of time. In other words, they may set the date of the wedding, you know, a year ahead of time. They may say, okay, on, you know, June 8th, I'm going to show up. That's the date of the wedding. So they knew when the wedding. See, here's the thing. Well, you'll see this in just a moment. They knew the date of the wedding. The bridesmaid, on that date, the date of the wedding, the bridesmaids met at the house of the bride on the wedding day. In other words, what he's describing here is the fact they knew when the bridegroom was coming. It wasn't a secret. They knew he was coming. They knew he was returning. They knew the day because the date had been set way in advance. So there was no question about this. So the date of the wedding is when the bridesmaids are referred to as virgins here. When the bridesmaids would all meet at the bride's home, preparing, getting ready, anticipating the bridegroom coming to get her. The bridegroom always came by to get his bride at 11:30 p.m., 11:30, the night of the wedding. Now, I don't know why they came up with 11:30. That part I haven't been able to dig up. But the bridegroom would always come at 11:30 to get his bride. And what would happen is this. As the bridegroom was coming, he would be coming from his dad's house to the bride's house. And if they were like three houses apart from each other, he'd take the long way around to get to her house. I mean, he'd walk all over the place, wind around through the streets and whatever. And there would be messengers. And the messengers would go forth and they would cry out, "The bridegroom is coming! The bridegroom is coming! Prepare yourselves! The bridegroom is coming!" And so, whether it was one or ten different messengers, they would always be going ahead and somebody crying out, "The bridegroom is coming." Now, the reason they did that was to sound the alarm, if you will. Alarm maybe is a little too strong of a term, but to let people know, hey, something great is getting ready to happen. The bridegroom is on his way to come and get his bride. And so the people then, if they happened to be asleep in their homes, it would awaken them. And they would realize, wow, a wedding is going to take place. And back then, weddings were a much more festive occasion. Well, I know that ours can get pretty wild at times here. But it was more, in other words, more people got involved than just family and friends. Okay? People that didn't even know you could get involved in this whole ceremony because these messengers are going out and making this declaration. The bridegroom would arrive at the bride's home and he would take her to his house, where there would be a big ceremony for the wedding and the wedding feast. And so he would go and he would knock on the door and then she would come out and the bridesmaids would also be there and they would come out as well. They would take the longest road possible to get back to his dad's house. So remember, if they were just like three houses apart, they didn't just walk like 15 steps down to the house. They'd walk all through the city or they'd take the long route to get back. And again, there'd be this celebration. And as they're going through the city, remember, the people had been alerted, the bridegroom is coming. The bridegroom is coming. And so people would be in anticipation. And in some cases, some of the people would actually, even if they didn't know the couple, they would actually maybe get dressed up and maybe find a gift in their home. And they would be standing out waiting for the bridegroom to pass back by with the bride. And as the bridegroom and the bride and the bridal party, the wedding party, would be coming back through the streets, returning on their way back to the father's house for the feast, the people that chose to would speak blessings over that couple. You know, may you have 1,000 children and 10,000 camels, you know, whatever it would be. You know, they would speak blessings and at some time they would actually present gifts to them. And some of them would actually join in this parade. They get dressed up in their finest and they join. It's a celebration. It didn't even know them. But they would just join in with this thing. Well, now, it talks about here in the story in Matthew about how the bridesmaids, the virgins, they had these lamps and they needed oil for the lamps. Okay, here's what they did with that. The bridesmaids, they had an oil lamp or lantern and it would be attached to a pole. And they would light these lanterns or these lamps. And they would carry them on the poles as they're walking through. Remember, 11:30 at night is when this whole thing basically starts. Or, you know, when the bridegroom is supposed to pick up the bride. He might have started 2 hours ago walking through with the messengers going forth. But by the time you get to 11:30, it's dark. So what they would do is they would have these lights on the poles. And as they were going through, the bridesmaids would hold these lamps on these poles. And it would light up. I mean, if you were like a half mile away, you could see this thing coming. Because It was brilliant. It just lit everything up. You know, they didn't have electricity back then, so they couldn't use flashlights. They used these lanterns. And this great procession, it's going through the city, and they're celebrating and they're singing, and boy, is everybody happy. It's a wonderful time, because when they get back to the Father's house, the Father will have prepared this huge feast for all the people that come in to celebrate the wedding between his son and this beautiful woman that he's marrying. Well, Paul makes this declaration back over there in Romans. He says, salvation is nearer than we believed. The night is far spent. Okay, now I want you to see the parallel in Matthew 25, verse 6. It says, and at midnight there was a cry. Well, and if you look in verse 5, it says, the bridegroom tarried, and they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. Okay, now remember, the bridegroom was supposed to show up at 11:30. Well, in verse 5, it says that the bridegroom tarried. Doesn't say why, for whatever reason, he was running late, half hour late. Because at midnight, the cry was made. You know, finally this call went out. The bridegroom cometh. The bridegroom cometh. You know, prepare yourself. The bridegroom cometh. And normally, if he had shown up on time, they'd all been ready inside the house. And they'd been ready to throw the door open. But, you know, 11:30, been a big day of preparation, had to iron the dress. I mean, you know, all these things are going on. You're tired. He doesn't show up at 11:30. It's like you're sitting around and you're waiting, and they fall asleep. Well, at midnight, a half hour late, the bridegroom finally shows up and the call goes forth. Because he was late, they had fallen asleep. They didn't realize how close the bridegroom was to arriving. You know, 10 minutes go by, 15, 20 minutes, 25. They don't realize he's really that close. He is going to be here. We just don't know when. At least we hope he's going to be here. I mean, what if something happened and he doesn't get here? I mean, what if he had a flat tire? I mean, what if he doesn't show up at all? What if he got cold feet and ran off to Florida? I mean, what if something happened and he never gets here? So in other words, they began to dismiss the reality, the truth of the fact that he really was going to be there. Because they thought he was supposed to be there at 11:30 and he doesn't show up. So their attention wanes. They begin to fall asleep. They assumed he would be quite late, so they fell asleep. In other words, he's supposed to be here by now, but he's not. So what do we do? I don't know. Might as well go to sleep. Who knows when he's going to get here, if at all? Now, Paul makes the statement back in Romans, cast off works of darkness, put on the armor of light. All right. Now, this corresponds to what Jesus says in verses 7 through 12. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterward came also the other virgin, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, verily, I say unto you, I know you not. Now notice this. In verse 7, all the bridesmaids, all of them, trimmed their lamps. Every single one of them. Now keep in mind, all of the bridesmaids were in the house of the bride. All of them. Every one of them, when the cry went forth, they got up and they trimmed their lamps. Verses 8 through 9 is the time lag between the cry of the messenger and the arrival of the bridegroom. Now notice this. Behold, verse 6, the bridegroom cometh, go out to meet him. Then all the virgins arose, trimmed their lamps. The foolish said, give us oil, our lamps are gone out. The wise answered, no, because if we do that, there might not be enough for all of us. You need to go get your own. In verse 10, while they went, the bridegroom came. Can you see there's a lag time between? It might have been 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, we don't know for sure. But what we do know is that there's a period of time in between when the cry went out that the bridegroom is coming and the actual moment that the bridegroom arrived. Now, here's the thing. They knew he was coming because the cry went forth. They're awakened out of their slumber from the standpoint of, okay, look, he was 30 minutes late, but the cry is, he's coming. Even though he was coming and the cry had gone forth, they still did not know the exact moment that he was going to knock on the door for his bride. Now, the five who were prepared, the five bridesmaids, the five virgins who were prepared, they had oil, they had light for their lamps. But the five who were foolish, now notice this, where they went. They said, give us your oil. The wise said, we can't do that. Go to the people that sell and buy for yourselves. Okay, what time is it? It's after midnight. Okay? Where do they have to go to get oil? They have to leave the house of the bride and go out into what? Darkness. There are no streetlights back in those days. There was no electricity. They walked out the door of the bride's house into darkness. Now, I don't know if any of you have done much traveling into remote areas, but trust me, when there's no electricity around at night, you better hope the moon is out in all its glory because you can't see anything. I mean, here's what's amazing. Even the stars help you see a little bit better. Because on a cloudless night, out in the middle of nowhere, you thank God that even the stars are out, let alone the moon. Because anything helps you to see a little bit better. Boy, you introduce some clouds, and you can hang it up. I mean, no light, nothing, you can't see. So what's happened is, these foolish actually have to go out into the dark. They leave the bride's home, and they go into the darkness. The bridegroom took his bride along with the five wise bridesmaids and everybody else that was a part of the wedding party and went to his father's house for the wedding feast. Upon arrival at the father's house, the door was shut. Now look at this. It says in verse 10 that while the foolish were out in the darkness looking for a way to get some oil, the bridegroom came. They that were ready went with him to the marriage and the door was shut. Now verse 10 is describing something in a few short words that would have taken a while to transpire. In other words, remember, we talked about how that they take the long way back home so that everybody can know about. So the cry is going out, okay? And the bride and the bridegroom and those that are a part of the party, the lamps, everything is, they're headed back to the father's house, but the foolish are still out there. The foolish bridesmaids are still out there in darkness. Now, it says the door was shut. Now, here was the custom back in those days. Once the door was shut at night, it was not opened again. Because you had vandals, okay? You had con artists, if you will. Think of it this way. There's a knock on your door. Who is it? I am a damsel in distress. I need help. I'm here with my baby. Oh, my goodness. We can't leave a young lady out there with her baby in the middle of the night. Open the door. Yeah, there's a damsel, all right, and four or five hooligans that are going to come in and steal everything. You see what I'm saying? I mean, they didn't have alarm systems back then like they do now. They didn't have 911, okay? No cell phones. This kind of stuff didn't exist. And so once the door was shut, they did not open the door again to let anybody else in because for this wedding feast, you had plenty of time to know that the bride was coming or the bridegroom is coming. You knew that this was the day. The date had been established, and you knew he's supposed to be here at 11:30. So you had all the time to prepare. The messengers go out, and they begin to cry in the streets. The bridegroom is coming. The bridegroom is coming. So the people in the homes along the path to the bride's home, they would have known. And if they had chosen, they could have gotten up and been prepared and joined the bridal party, the wedding party, as it's headed back to the father's house for the feast. So in other words, you know, we're not talking about something that took place in like 5 or 10 minutes. What we're seeing here in verse 10 where it says, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage and the door was shut. It took a while for them to get back to the father's house. It wasn't just something like this. The door was shut. Everybody heard the cry. Everybody knew that the bride was there. Everybody knew the bride was with his bridegroom. They saw the lights. I mean, everything was there. They had all the evidence that they needed to know that there's a wedding feast that's going to take place. And if they had wanted to be a part of it, they could have. And the only reason they weren't was because they chose not to be a part of it, except for the foolish virgins. The foolish weren't a part of it because they actually did the opposite of what they were supposed to do. They knew they were supposed to have oil for their lamps. This wasn't a surprise to them. The custom was you went to the bride's house, you had your lamp, you had the oil. You knew what was expected. They've had all this time to prepare for this moment. So when they showed up at the bride's house with their lamps, okay, you've got your lamp, but you didn't bring the oil necessary. So they actually had to leave the bride's house and go back out into darkness. Are you seeing the imagery here in this and the message that the Lord's trying to get across? With this wedding feast, the door gets shut, nobody gets admitted, and in verse 11, these foolish show up and they knock on the door and they say, "Lord, Lord, open to us." And he says, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." Now to us that might sound harsh, but again, keep in mind the practice and the custom of the day. Once that door was shut, that was it. They didn't open it again to let somebody else. Here's the thing. In our day and time, in your wedding party, you know, you had the bridesmaids, then you had the groomsmen. Okay, if you're the one that's getting married, you know who they are, don't you? Now, some of you, maybe you can relate to this, how that when you got married, it's possible that the lady you were marrying or the guy that you were marrying asked someone to be a bridesmaid or a groomsman, but you didn't know her or him until they showed up, like maybe the day of the rehearsal or something. You know what I'm saying? It's possible there was somebody there that you didn't know ahead of time. They maybe had to come from out of state or whatever. An old college friend. You've never met him, but I'm telling you, he's a great guy and so on and so forth. Okay. There was no guarantee that all of the bridesmaids were friends of the bride. Customs are different over there at this time. And so what I'm getting at is this. If your best friend runs out of gas and then shows up late and knocks on the door, you're going to recognize the voice. You know what I'm saying? You're going to let that person in. So it wasn't that somebody's being mean to a best friend in this thing, which says, I don't know you. You have to realize that the father of the bride may have had no knowledge of who these women are, but they became a part of the, somehow through the customs and so forth, you know, they're a part of the bridal, or should have been a part of the bridal party. So the door is locked. He says, you know, I don't know you. And in verses 13 through 14, Jesus says, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." And just verse 13, we don't need verse 14 on that. Jesus is not saying that we cannot know when he's coming, just not the exact moment. Now, this is the thing that's so very important. He's not saying you can't know when I'm coming back. He's saying you can't know the exact moment. Remember, the scheduled time of the arrival of the bridegroom is 11:30. But the bridegroom tarried. We don't know why. All right, let me ask you a question. Any of you ever wondered, why is the Lord tarrying? Why? I thought he would have come back by now. How many of you were expecting him to show up at midnight, New Year's Eve, for the year 2000? How many of you thought, this is it, he's going to be here, better not be sinning tonight, boy, I tell you, he's coming back. and then, here it is, he hasn't come back. How many of you have wondered, I thought he'd have been here by now. I honestly thought he'd have come back by now. I don't understand this. How many of you have ever heard the term, well, you know, in 5 years, we're planning such and such, if the Lord tarries. You ever heard that? Okay. Why would he tarry? Well, I don't know, but if he does, okay. They didn't know why the bridegroom was tarrying, but he did. They expected him at 11:30, but he didn't show up, but they knew he was coming. He shows up a half hour late. In other words, what the message Jesus is trying to get across here is, listen, I'm coming back, okay? Now, you will not know the exact moment that I knock on your door to take you to the wedding feast. But you can know when I'm coming. Now, let me give you some examples here. In Matthew chapter 16, this passage kind of exemplifies this. Matthew chapter 16, verse 1. The Pharisees and Sadducees came and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said unto them, when it is evening, ye say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the times? A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall be no sign given unto it, but the sign of Jonah, of the prophet Jonah, and he left them and departed. In other words, using this passage, it's like he's saying, okay, look, you look at everything else that's going on around you as an indicator for something. But if you sit down and think about this, you can discern the times. And really think about it, guys. All we have to do is read what Jesus taught, read the prophecies in the Old Testament, read the book of Revelation. I mean, all these things that are in Scripture, we can discern the times. Paul writes about things that are coming, you know, and how stuff's coming to a head. And he talks about, really, one of the signs is a continued increase in wrong doctrine. Remember, it talks about people departing from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Okay, that's a sign of the time. And quite frankly, that's increasing. And we won't get into all of that tonight. We just don't have time, but that is increasing. And if you look in Luke chapter 21, Luke chapter 21, verse 25, Jesus says, and there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. I mean, is he describing the era in which we live? I mean, think about this. Look at what's going on. Look at all the natural stuff that's happening. You know, last year they have more hurricanes in one season than they've ever had before. I mean, all this kind of stuff is going on. And here's the crazy thing about it. We see it happening. And Jesus is saying, look, wake up, open your eyes. This is a sign my return is closer. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then they shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption or your salvation draweth nigh, which is what Paul was talking about. Our salvation is nearer than what we thought. Jump to verse 34. And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life. And so that day come upon you unawares. Okay, what's he describing? Foolish virgins, the foolish bridesmaid. In other words, you dismiss the signs and give yourself over to darkness. We're going to see this even more clearly here in just a few moments. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Scriptures and prophets cry unto this. Like the messenger, scriptures and prophecies and prophets rather cry unto us that the bridegroom cometh. I mean, you think about what you're reading in the Bible, but then today, what do we hear? Preachers standing up talking about these things and telling us, just look around you. I mean, the time is coming to a close. You look at what is happening in the Middle East. I mean, over there in the Middle East, you know, you've got nations that are so close to developing nuclear weapons. And have you noticed? You know, I'm not an end time prophet, but have you noticed? It's like, quite frankly, there is a slumber that is taking place throughout the world with regard to the dangers. I mean, think about this. There are a lot of things that are going on right now in this world. I mean, there is a slumber with regard to what is happening over. Well, we have someone here tonight from South Korea. And I know that she could share with you how that in South Korea, there is a move for unification with the North. And it's a danger. It's scaring a lot of people over there because the North has absolutely no intention of being peaceful. They just want the economy. They want the land. They want the people. They want to take over. But it's like for some of the people over there, it's like a slumber. And they think that it's going to be a positive thing that's going to work to everybody's good for this kind of unification. And yet in reality, the people that can remember back, you know, when I was over there, I talked to some of them about that. And they say, we've got too many people that are young. They don't remember what it was like during the Korean War and how bad things were and how hard it was. All they know is the prosperity they've grown up in here in South Korea. They think that's what's going to continue. In reality, the North just wants to take over and dominate. Here's the thing about it. In Scripture, there are prophecies about the armies of the East rising up. So you see, this stuff is happening. It's going on right before our very eyes. It's taking place, and yet in the body of Christ, Jesus has said, look up! Why should we look up, Jesus? Remember what the angel said? In the same way you saw him go up, he's coming back. In other words, Jesus is saying, look up because I'm coming back. Live your life as though I'm walking in the door any moment. Live your life as though, stop thinking in terms of, well, he's not coming back. He, you know, he's not going to return the way that he said. Now, the message that Paul is sending, if you turn back over there to Romans, the message that Paul is sending is in this. I mean, I'm sure you can see the parallel between what Paul wrote and what Jesus taught back there in Matthew 25. Here's the message that Paul is sending. We are bridesmaids awaiting the bridegroom. We must not become weary in well-doing, falling asleep in our religion, which is exactly what's going on in the lives of so many Christians. He didn't come, Jesus now, he didn't come at 11:30, but he will be here soon. If you look in 2 Peter chapter 3, and take a look at verses 3 through 4. Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts, saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. Now, who are these scoffers? It's not the lost people. Lost people aren't looking for his return. He's talking about people in the body of Christ. And the scoffing, it's not so much a complete disbelief, but it's like they're dismissing the reality of what's really taking place. If you look in 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, verse 28, it says, and now, little children, abide in him. In other words, stay in him, that when he shall appear, we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming. Why would we be ashamed if we were the foolish virgins who refused to abide in him, the oil of his life, so that we would be prepared when he comes back, so that we would not be ashamed at his appearing? Because, you know, using that story that Jesus shared, the ones that didn't have the oil, you know that they were ashamed of the fact that they did not prepare themselves for when the bridegroom arrived for the bride. They left the bride's house and they go out into the darkness. And Jesus is saying, you've got to be ready. Paul is reiterating this message. He's saying, listen, it's high time to wake up. Jesus is returning. Each minute brings him closer, and we'd better prepare. And then Paul goes on. If you look back over there in Romans 13, he says in verse 12, to cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Okay, before we get into this last section here, let's go ahead and take a break.